Through the Christmas season, we read different accounts of the events surrounding the birth of Jesus. Luke tells us that Mary and Joseph traveled to Bethlehem and birthed the baby in a stable. It makes for a really good Christmas pageant. John tells us that the Christ was from the beginning of time, that he is the eternal Word of God. Matthew describes darker events, Herod's rage at learning of the birth of Jesus and his massacre of the children in Bethlehem, the coming of the wise men from the east with their gifts, and then their departure. And Mark leaves out any story of Jesus' birth. Today we celebrate the coming of the Magi, or the wise persons, and recognize God's revelation of God's self for all the peoples of the world. As Isaiah said, "Nations shall come to your light and kings to the brightness of your dawn." The Magi represent the Gentiles who came to see who Jesus was. The word epiphany comes from a Greek word meaning to reveal. And this Epiphany Day celebrates the revelation of God the Son as a human being in Jesus the Christ. Epiphany reveals that even in his infancy, Jesus Christ is for all of humanity, not only for those chosen few, those insiders, the Israelites initially. He is for the outsiders. He comes to draw people together. Wise men from the east, Syrians from the north, Egyptians from the south, Romans from the west. The truth that grabs us in the moment of Epiphany, the moment when Christ is revealed to the Gentiles, is that Jesus Christ is the very love of God incarnate. And that love does not belong to any ethnic or national or religious or identity. It cannot be restricted by gender or claimed as if it was only for the powerful and the privileged. Jesus Christ, as the new King of Israel, is in fact Jesus Christ, the sovereign ruler over all the earth. Although we sing the well-known hymn, and will today, of these persons, these wise persons who were kings, you know, we three kings of Orient are, actually, they weren't kings at all. They were probably philosophers and astrologers, perhaps even sorcerers. Some think they may have been Zoroastrian priests. But whoever they were, these wise persons were shrewd observers of the night sky, those who looked for signs of decisive events and clues to the future in the heavens. The great biblical scholar Raymond Brown notes that the church has worked really overtime in imagining and creating this wise men strand. These wise men are magi, the same word from which we get magician. And they were consummate outsiders. They were Gentiles. There is nothing in the text that tells us that there was any particular number of magi, and nothing to suggest that they were all male. In fact, some scholars have suggested that the text clearly indicates that some of these magi were women because they asked for directions. So Matthew tells us that just as Jesus is born, they saw this new star rising in the western sky over Judea, the land of the Jews. Using all their powers of analysis and interpretation and discernment, they determined that this star was a sign that a new king had been born, that the Jews had been given a new king, and the lights of heaven proclaimed it. The arrival of the wise men from the east asking Herod about a new king of the Jews obviously set off all kinds of alarms around the city of Jerusalem. Because if there is a new king of the Jews, that means the old king is done. That obviously didn't sit well. When the Magi didn't come back to Herod, Herod's bloodthirsty rage erupted. And he ordered every little male child in and around Bethlehem to be murdered. The child Jesus escaped only because his parents fled to Egypt. Jesus and his parents were refugees. They were asylum seekers. They were fleeing murderers at home, trying to escape death. Not unlike the families who were fleeing disasters in their own countries and looking for refuge on our borders. There are other facets of the Epiphany story which are also parallel to our own times. Children dying by war or disease or starvation. World leaders terrified of losing their power and willing to do almost anything to hold on to it. I think there are three important pieces to the Epiphany story. The first, most important, is God's incarnation, God coming to the world in human flesh, in the person of Jesus. And that has everything to do with race and culture and class and gender and orientation, and the truth that all people are equal in the light of Christ. That every person everywhere is made in God's image and loved unconditionally. Epiphany has everything to do with Brown versus Board of Education, with Wounded Knee, with the Edmund Pettus Bridge and the Stonewall Riots. It has everything to do with the treatment of marginalized people. Epiphany has everything to do with inclusion and radical hospitality. The multicultural, multinational, multi-religious scene at the manger reminds us of God's love and inclusion of all. The second aspect of the Epiphany story has to do with the competition that dogs Christ in every place he goes in the world. The question is, whose possession is the world? Who is in charge? I think there's a Herod-like darkness in all of us. Each of us calling out, "It's mine, it's mine." Each of us wants to be king or queen over something. And yet, it's not us. None of us is born to reign. That the question is asked in one way or another in numerous countries around the world as we speak today. And in the shadows of every soul, we clutch to secure the hard-won sovereignty over our own lives. Christ is the one born to reign. Will we let him? And I think the third dimension of the story is that a light begins to shine in the birth of that child, a light which will never be extinguished. The light comes from a life lived in the first century Palestine, but that light still warms us. That light which was buried just outside of Jerusalem and then rose again still burns here in Norwalk at 60 East Avenue and moves out from this place. It is that third quality of the Epiphany story that I think we're called to focus on. We have and continue to experience the darkness that Isaiah mentions, the darkness in our own lives, in the society, in the wider world. As we heard from John's Gospel last week, what has come into being in him was life, and the life was the light of all people. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not overcome it. In other words, the bottom line of the Christmas story, even with its dark scenes, is that the goodness of God cannot be overcome. That God is still in charge. That we, no more than King Herod and all of Jerusalem, do not have the final say in how the world or even our lives run. Jesus. Jesus comes in love and mercy. He comes to save. He comes for all, leaving out no one who admits their need. And God consistently sides with the oppressed and saves those who are in need. God works through the Magi. God warns in dreams. God helps the family that had to take flight. God provides shelter and sanctuary in Egypt. Very little of this is what the various characters in this story would have hoped for or planned for. And yet none of it is absent God's presence. God's light still and always shines. And God dispenses this divine light and love with profligate generosity. God never asks, "Where's your passport?" or "What's your family heritage?" or "What's your culture or your education or your class or your orientation or your race?" The light of Christ anticipates that everywhere in the world, every household, every church, every country will be places of welcome and inclusion and safety and belonging and justice and respect. Epiphany is about putting to work the light that was born in Bethlehem. It is the season to leave the manger and our own comfort and enter the places in our world which are messy and complex and broken, to shine a light on that which is wrong, to illuminate that which hides in the dark, to bring healing and comfort to those who have been hurt by others. It is about speaking truth, acting justly, standing with the least of Jesus' brothers and sisters, about loving God and loving our neighbors as ourselves. Today and every day. It is our work as we go forward from here. As the last line of our worship bulletin reads each week, the worship is over, the service begins.